Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dudes just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. By the way, thank you to our retired E7 David who called in during the break to give us a heads up that there was also a terrorist incident in Israel. 10 people killed. I believe that was in a, a gunman type issue, or gunmen, plural. I'm not sure which, but yeah, that happened in, I think, in northern Israel, in Rafah. Anyway, all said and done, the travails continue. But story right now on the screen, Pentagon is saying that they will not speculate as to Israel's next move. In other words, don't ask us, ask them. There's going to be a next move, just so you know. This is not going to be allowed to continue. And I think we're going to find out very quickly that the same country that knows how to make pagers explode on people's hips probably has a little something going on in Iran right now.
To be frank, if I was Israel, I'm not sure I'd tell America exactly what my plans were either.
Well, listen, the strikes on the Hezbollah leadership the other day, one of the things that kept coming out was the United States was not aware. There's a reason for that. All right, listen, we're going to jump into the first dipper. I'm calling this Dock Strike. That's exactly what it is. If you're not familiar, this happened, and it's been brewing over time, but it's not been something that's been on everybody's radar because, you know, the hope is they're going to get it worked out. Well, they haven't. So the International Longshoremen's Association, the ILA, is the union that represents like 45,000 dock workers up and down the East and Gulfport states. It's unbelievable to the extent that this could impact our economy. They went on strike last night at midnight. So let me just walk through a few pieces of this just to set the stage for you, all right? You may be thinking, why do I care they're striking? It's going to impact us. If it continues more than a few days, it's going to impact us. Story here on Fox Business, unionized dock workers at 36 East and Gulf Coast ports, which by the way includes Mobile, went on strike early Tuesday amid an impasse in negotiations over a new contract with a group that represents port employers. So the ILA is the union. The U.S. Maritime Alliance is the alliance of employers. So that's labor versus the owners. Negotiations between the ILA and the Maritime Alliance have been deadlocked this far over union demands related to wage hikes, compensation, and protection from automation. Now, I got some stuff on this. All right, we're going to come back to that, some of their demands. But let's start, first of all, with where this is going to go for us. So the ILA has said that they will exempt cruise ships and military cargoes. Nice of them. Okay, so if you're coming back on a Carnival Cruise Lines, you're not going to be abandoned and not be able to offload your luggage. There's that. If you're a military cargo ship and you have to get things to the far reaches of the world to supply our military forces, that will still be allowed too. Yay, thank you. But the negotiations have reached an impasse because the Maritime Alliance, the employers, had to file an unfair labor complaint with the National Labor Relations Board against the union last week, arguing that they were breaking all the labor laws by refusing to even negotiate. Okay, is that true? I don't know. That's the claim. But here's the thing. Seaports from Maine to Texas, y'all. From Maine all the way down the coast, around Florida, into the Gulf Coast, through the upper west side of Florida, into Mobile, New Orleans, and over to Galveston area. We're talking about Maine to Texas. U.S. ports are literally the ones who collectively handle like half of all imports and exports to the United States. J.P. Morgan just did an estimate on the daily cost to the U.S. economy if this port strike continues. Just this half of the United States, if this port strike continues, will begin to cost $3.8 to $4.5 billion per day to the U.S. economy. Billions of dollars a day. Now, it also impacts us right here at home. Story here on MyNBC 15, down yonder in the coastal regions. Bradley Byrne and I were texting this morning. If you're not familiar, Bradley Byrne is a former U.S. congressman. He served the southern portions of the state of Alabama as their congressman. Bradley Byrne is now the head of the Mobile Chamber of Commerce down in Mobile. I was hoping to get him on today, but he was in the middle of traveling. In fact, he's traveling right now as we speak. But Bradley Byrne and I were talking, but I did find an article in which he was quoted. He said this, including the Alabama Port Authority, that's our Mobile port, he said, this is a complete stoppage. It means that things we depend on won't be able to get into and out of the United States. And here's the thing. He says the Walmart Mega Distribution Center in West Mobile gets all of its stuff to the ports. It won't be able to receive any more stuff from overseas, which means a lot of things are not going to be on their shelves, which means a lot of things are not going to be on Walmart shelves in general. He says a shutdown doesn't mean, though, that when they turn it back on, it comes right back. Even a one-day shutdown has an effect that can last up to a week. So for every day they're down, one estimate says, for every day they are down on strike, it takes 5 days to recoup from that one day. So for every day they're down, the supply chain is disrupted for up to five. He also points this out. One of their demands is they want freedom from automation. What? Yeah, they want no automation. Automation's bad. Well, automation is the wave of the future, but he points out, he says, automations are a red herring. So the automation they keep referring to with the Port of Mobile has already been in place since 2008. They've negotiated two contracts since then and never once called it. All right, but what's this going to do to us? Where are we going to see the supply chain go? And what can the government even do about it? Well, with 45,000 dock workers on strike, 1819 News points out that our own delegation is already calling it out. U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville has blamed the Biden-Harris administration for its deep impact, saying the nation's supply chain is going to be shut down, our economy crippled. Tuberville's words, he says, quote, everything from groceries to fabrics to metals is going to be impacted because of the Biden-Harris administration's failure to avoid this strike. Don't take my word from it. He says, look at the Oxford Economics List. The Oxford Economics List is the list of all things that import and export through those ports. And it's significant. I'm looking at a copy of it. It's 10 products: tobacco, nicotine, dairy, eggs, honey, synthetic fibers, carpets, coffee, tea, spices, ships, boats, floating structures, essential oils and perfumes and cosmetics and copper. That's all the imports. Exports, a lot of the same, but it's huge. So you may look at it and go, oh, Tuberville, stop being political. Why have you got to blame the Biden-Harris administration? Well, maybe because there's actually a law that allows the administration to take action. It's called the Taft-Hartley Act. It's 70 years old. It's been used something like 27 or 30 times since it was enacted. The Taft-Hartley Act. What it does is it said, in the event of a labor negotiation that could negatively impact our national security or destroy our economy, that the president has the authority through his administrative actions imbued to him by Congress to be able to invoke a mandatory cooling off period. Taft-Hartley allows the president to come in and say, you will now take a 90-day moratorium as a matter of law. A 90-day, you will go back to work and you will work for the next 90 days while we get you back to the negotiating table to work things out. It also talks about things that can happen to help prevent some of the damages to the economy. But the first thing it does is it keeps the economy in place. It keeps the wheels of commerce moving. It makes sure that national security is not negatively impacted. And yet the Biden-Harris administration has said that they will not invoke Taft-Hartley. Why not? Why would you not? We are sitting in a situation right now where goods need to flow. Not just for the economy, which is still struggling out of the Biden-Harris debacle, but also because we have whole sections of the Southeast that have been ravaged by a hurricane, towns that have been wiped out, and they're going to need supplies and they're going to need, you know, basically assets and things moved to them that are outside the norm. And yet we're not going to be able to see the shelves being stocked with the things that we might need to get to them. I have to ask, what is the Biden administration going to do? Have they been focused on this at all? When we get back from this next break, I got a series of clips here that will help you break it down. But also, I'm going to play one for you that's going to tick you off. Because don't tell me, we're going to take a break first, but don't tell me that the union doesn't have a gut-wrenching thug attitude about this. They could care less what happens to the rest of the nation. Give me some of mine. It's time for y'all to give me some of mine. Doesn't matter what happens to the rest of the nation. But first and foremost, let's talk about what the Commerce Secretary has to say about it. It's going to surprise you too. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. So, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades. So, you know, 35 days to the election. In fact, one of our listeners, Mel, just texted in and said, these next 35 days leading up to the election are going to be like nothing we've ever seen, I'm afraid. And that, yeah, I mean, listen, Mel, you are correct. I mean, take a look right now. Within the next 35 days, we've got a devastated portion of our southeastern regions recovering from a massive hurricane and floodings. We've got a supply chain disruption with a dock worker strike. We don't know how long it's going to last. And we've got the Middle East going boom. All at one time, all in the last 36 hours. So 35 days to the election, folks. There's that.
Don't forget the little conflict between Russia and Ukraine. That's also kind of going on.
There's those guys. Yeah, I forgot about that piece. But there's so much out there right now. You look at it and go, okay, all right, Biden administration, what are you doing? And some of you may look at it and go, well, what can they do? I mean, it's labor. They can't get in the middle of a labor dispute. Yes, they can. They actually can. Now, President Biden was asked in one of those shouting, you know, moments there as he's about to get on Air Force One recently, probably coming back from his beach trip again to the Rehoboth Beach, Delaware Beach House. But he was asked by the press, will you intervene in the dock strike? Will you invoke Taft-Hartley? And he just looked at him and went, no. And they said, why not? And his response was, I don't believe in Taft-Hartley. That's a labor negotiation. I got news. You have a job to do, sir. Your national economy is bigger than your relationship to the union bosses. But Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, I'm going to go ahead and call for audio clip number one. You give me the thumbs up when you're good. So audio clip number one, very short segment, audio clip of Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo for the Trump administration. Just, I think it was Sunday, on CNBC doing an interview and was asked directly, you know, if this thing rocks on, what will you do and about the dock worker strike? Listen to her benign answer. Go ahead.
Where have you been kind of focused and hearing on what would happen if the strike goes, let's say, longer than a week?
Again, I have not been very focused on that.
So that's her answer. It didn't get any better. That was not a clipped statement because there was more behind it that I didn't want you to hear. That was it. That was the Secretary of Commerce going, I haven't been very focused on that. She's the same person, by the way, who was questioned on some Department of Labor statistics in one of the post-debate discussions. And she said, well, I'm not going to go down. I haven't really studied that. And I don't believe anything that Trump says anyway, because I've never have. And the lady looked at her and, to her credit, goes, these are your Department of Labor statistics. And she went, well, I haven't had a chance to review those. I don't think she does her job. I don't know what she does. Maybe she just attends, you know, like cocktail parties in D.C., inside the Beltway functions. But the reality is, she's a friggin' Secretary of Commerce. And the International Longshoremen's Association is going on strike as of last night. It has a massive impact upon the economy. And the Secretary of Commerce says she really hasn't even been looking at this. I don't find any measure of confidence in the Biden administration. If you heard my monologue earlier, you know that I pointed out that they have spent years trying to build a wedge in society, claiming to be the administrations of the little guy, the ones who were always there for the union. They're not there for the rank and file. They're there for the power given to them by the union bosses, the endorsements, the finances, the get out the vote effort. And they have been driving this wedge for decades. We're there for the unions. We're never more so than what you see in the Biden administration. The Biden administration has openly and flagrantly passed laws. Did you know that some of what's in the Inflation Reduction Act that deals with electric vehicles and others requires them to be built in union-only plants? How's that the free market? But the reality is the Biden administration has, unlike all others before them, gone so all in on claiming to be for the unions, and then they still lost the Teamsters vote most recently. And when that happened, it threw paroxysms of fear through the Democrats. How did we lose the Teamsters? I don't know. What do we do? I don't know, but don't make any more unions mad. And so here we are with the dock workers now going, hey, they need us, man. And if Trump gets elected, we're not going to have the same level of bargaining power. If Trump got elected, he'd invoke Taft-Hartley like on day one. So if we're going to do this, we better do it now. And so with 35 days to the election, the Democrats are suddenly finding themselves in the awkward position of trying to suck up to the union bosses without making them mad, at the same time realizing they're about to drive the economy into the dirt. And that's where we are. Now, how much time have I got for the break? Probably not much time right now, right?
Yeah, about a minute.
I've got a segment that my intent is to go ahead and make you mad. I'm just going to tell you right now. I had to choose. I had two absolutely inflammatory audio tracks that I could have chosen from. I just went ahead and picked one because it was the one that didn't have the cuss words in it. Just saying. Because the thug named Harold Daggett, and when I say the thug, I mean, if they were to do a repeat of Goodfellas, he would be one of the guys in the background going, y'all going to go take you downtown, you know what I'm saying? Give you a little something to think about. I know a guy knows a guy, you know what I mean? That's who we're talking about. Harold Daggett is making over $900,000 a year as the head of the ILA. $900,000 a year. And he says, it's time for us to get our fair share, and I'm going to shut down the economy. And he says it. He literally says he is absolutely going to shut down the economy. He's going to cripple it, in his words. And he says it pretty foul in one of the other videos that I chose not to play. Never mind the fact that he apparently has a 76-foot yacht and a Bentley and makes over $900,000 a year as the union boss. He also was up on RICO charges a few years ago, but he got off when the witness was found dead in a trunk of a car. That being said, Harold Daggett, he could care less about the rest of us. He just knows that right now the Democrats need his votes, and they're not going to do anything to rock the boat. He's going to make sure that, in fact, the boats don't get unloaded, because that's what Harold Daggett thinks is the best way to go. Forget the rest of the economy. Screw y'all. I want mine. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We're going to play some of that when we get back. Y'all stay tuned. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one. I do mean this one. I'm talking about this one. Don't argue with me. It's this one. It's Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gaston, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right, we do cover a lot of ground. We also cover a lot of ground on our topics. And I do have to make mention, by the way, that I'm reminded that tonight is also the vice presidential debate. JP, you said it is right now scheduled to come on at what time?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock central.
Yes.
Wow. Those guys are going to be on the stage a little late tonight.
90-minute debate. I think 4 commercials breaks is what I saw. So
that's called 4 bathroom breaks is what that is. All right. So, yeah, the vice presidential debate between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz is tonight. I think it'll be interesting because there's so much in the news right now, not the least of which is there's been confirmations that Tim Walz spent a lot of time in China.
I assume that J.D. Vance will bring that up.
I assume.
In detail.
I think it's a fair assumption.
Considering the moderators will not.
I'm going to go ahead and just lay odds that that's the way it's going to work. I suspect that that Tim Walz is going to have his pat answers for certain things like the stolen valor question and all that kind of stuff. But, when they did that interview where he and Kamala Harris sat down with,
Dana Bash.
Bash, yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you. He didn't answer his questions very well, to be honest.
I was actually surprised that he seemed caught off guard by a lot of the questions.
Maybe he thought it would be easier on him than it was.
But then when he gave the bad answers, Dana Bash didn't follow up. She just let it go. It's, you know, she can claim she asked the tough questions, but then she didn't follow up when he didn't give an answer.
So what do you think tonight? Are they going to be fact-checking the Republican and letting the Democrat go again?
Likely, yeah. It's funny because actually Jake Tapper and Dana Bash did a good job of not fact-checking Trump during that debate, but then the ABC one, it was like they only fact-checked Trump.
Oh,
so I feel like they're only going to fact-check or fact check Vance, or not fact check at all. There would no be fact checks of
there shouldn't be fact that there that's the point of a debate.
Yeah, exactly.
Let the debater fact check you.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? If at the same time, if you're going to do that, you better make it equal across the board. And that's not what we've seen. Mm. All right, listen, let me jump back on topic. So I'm in this number two of the Triple Dipper, the dock strike. What we're watching right now with the dock strike has the potential impact on our economy like another Hurricane Katrina, like another pandemic. It is of that level. The guy who is the head of the ILA, that's the International Longshoremen's Association, that's the union that has these 45,000 dock workers that go from Maine all the way down around to the Gulf Coast and into Texas. The guy who is the head of the union has made some very inflammatory comments of late. And he comes across like a thug. And I don't mean that lightly. He comes across like a thug. I mean, literally, he looks, sounds, and acts like something out of a stereotypical mafia movie. And he's got a pretty checkered background. But his name's Harold Daggett. Daggett, I tell you what, I'm going to call up audio number three. I'm going to play it first before I do the other one on Charles Payne. So audio three is Harold Daggett. Let's just listen to some of his comments, and we'll take it from there.
Let me explain something to you. These people today don't know what a strike is.
Right.
When my men hit the streets from Maine to Texas, every single port will lock down. You know what's going to happen? I'll tell you. First week, be all over the news every night, boom, boom. Second week, guys who sell cars can't sell cars because the cars ain't coming in off the ships. They get laid off. Third week, malls start closing down. They can't get the goods from China. They can't sell clothes. They can't do this. Everything in the United States comes on a ship. They go out of business. Construction workers get laid off because the materials aren't coming in. The steel's not coming in. The lumber's not coming in. They lose their job. Everybody's hating the longshoremen now because now they realize how important our jobs are. Now I have the president screaming at me, I'm putting a Taft Hartley on you. Go ahead. Taft Hartley means I have to go back to work for 90 days. That's a cooling off period. Do you think when I go back for 90 days, those men are gonna go to work on that pier? It's gonna cost the money, the company's money to pay their salaries. Well, they went from 30 moves an hour maybe to 8. They're gonna be like this. Who's gonna win here in the long run? You're better off sitting down and let's get a contract and let's move on with this world. And in today's world, I'll cripple you. I will cripple you and you have no idea what that means. Nobody does.
That's the guy in charge of the union. That's the guy who is openly saying, I'll cripple you. And he didn't say, I'll cripple you, big bosses. What he said was, all you construction workers are going to lose your jobs. And all you guys that sell cars won't have any cars to sell. And all you people that have stores won't have items on your shelves. And all you people are going to be mad at us. But guess what? I'll cripple you. What a freaking thug. Oh, by the way, he's doing this. Look at his timing. Look at his timing. You've got a southeastern United States that's been devastated from storms that have been like, these are not 100-year, these are 500-year storms that have come through and destroyed whole communities who will now not even be able to get basic essentials if this continues. You've got truckers. What'd you say? You said earlier you were talking about it. How many trucks a day go in and out of those ports?
Yeah, I heard a statistic of about 12,000 trucks.
12,000 truckers.
Per port.
Oh, my gosh. The thousands of truckers that are not going to have work, which means that there's thousands and thousands of gas stations that won't be supplying gas to these truckers, which means there's thousands of petroleum suppliers that won't be able to have any reason to supply the stations because they won't be drawn down. And then you got just the basics. I mean, how many people on the road that just drive the truck stop to eat somewhere along the way? It's going to – don't tell me trickle-down economics doesn't work, because what we're about to watch is it how it stops trickling when they shut off the flow. And he knows that. Harold Daggett knows that, and he could care less. I got the other video that I didn't play of him where he, you know, his language got really foul. It was bleeped and bleeped and bleeped again. but in the same course of that conversation, talking about how they'll cripple the economy, he went ahead and said, "We're going to get Oz. We're going to get Oz. You had yours. We're going to get Oz." I mean, what an absolute turd. But that's the head of the dock workers union, who knows exactly what he's doing. He could care less about whether the administration even intervened with the Taft-Hartley Act. What are you going to do to me? Oh, sure, I'll go back to work for 90 days, but you're going to pay me, and I'm not going to work very hard. 90 days, I might unload 8 when I would have unloaded 30. I'll cripple you. I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. That's where we are with these guys. East Coast port strike, according to CNBC, the union has rejected the wage hike offer. What was the wage hike, by the way? $5 an hour every year for the next 7 years, increase in pay. $5 an hour. Where would that put them? On the average, $70 an hour. That's unbelievable. Now, what's this going to do to our economy? Charles Payne, in my opinion, is one of the best at analyzing economic issues and breaking them down in a way you can see. I'm going to go ahead and call for audio number 3. How much time we got? Audio 2, I'm sorry. Audio 2 is Charles Payne. We're okay. It's going to be close, but we got it. I'll run along if I have to. Listen, this is an interview with Fox Business host Charles Payne. Daily Caller had the article. We ripped the audio straight from their presentation of it, but it was a Fox Business interview that he's on. Charles Payne, let's go ahead and play it.
And Charles Payne, host of Making Money. Charles, give us your prediction. Will it happen?
I think it will happen. I mean, it's one of these showdowns that comes around not too often, and I think the stakes are extraordinarily high for these longshoremen, and they're digging in their heels. And here's the thing. This was 4 or 5 years ago, pre-pandemic. Most people hadn't really heard about supply chain lines and those sort of things. Now they understand, hey, you start to mess around with the system is designed, you know, not just now, but if you mess it up too long, it's going to take a long time to fix, because we already lived through that. And I think they've got that going for them as well.
Okay, so this is the president saying that he's not going to intervene if these port workers go on strike. He said this just yesterday. Yeah. Watch.
Mr. President, would you intervene in the dock workers' strike if they go on strike on Tuesday?
No.
Why not?
Because it's collective bargaining. I don't believe in Taft-Hartley.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's playing a very, very dangerous game, a really dangerous game. And I think that what happened with the weather and the storms over the weekend makes it even more so. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we're talking about, you heard the prior guests talking about food, 53% of ag imports, waterborne imports, the vehicle market. Just eggs, poultry, beef. It just goes on and on and on. And here's the rule of thumb. So for every one day it's shut down, it sort of translates into 5 days of disruptions.
Yikes.
So, I mean, it really has its multiplier.
And that can spiral, as we
know.
And J.P. Morgan's put out a report on the potential cost of this, and it is staggering. Okay, they're saying we estimate shutting down the East and Gulf Coast ports could have an economic impact of between $3.8 and $4.5 billion a day, some of which would be recovered after a return to normal operations over time. Yeah, we won't hold our breath, right? This is Chris Spear. He's an American Trucking Association president.
Pause it there. So Charles Payne has broken it down pretty clearly. He's an economic guru, all right? He has made his name by being able to advise people and also be able to break the issues down and, you know, put it down where the baby goats can get to it. There are certain people who I look for their commentary. And here's one of them. On military, I look for General Jack Keane. On matters of politics, I look for Newt Gingrich. On matters of economics and economic policy, I look for Charles Payne, especially when it comes to what's the impact. And he's saying right now that the President of the United States has chosen to take a very big risk, because what he's doing is trying to side with the union bosses but put all of us at risk in the process, in order to get the votes of the unions 35 days from now. That's where we are. You and I are looking at paying more for milk and bread, more for gas, having fewer things on the shelf to choose from, recognizing that our paycheck won't go as far. Also that Joe Biden can say, I won't get involved in collective bargaining, even though the law gives him the authority to do so. Now, Daggett may say, we'll go to work and we won't get much work done, but I guarantee you, if you got ships backed up and the longshoremen are sitting on their keisters eating a sandwich, someone's going to say something. But they don't want to go down that road because they know they've got the administration in their pocket right now. And they are not going to get anybody rocking their boat for the next 35 days. And if Trump was in office, I guarantee you Taft-Hartley would have been done yesterday. All right, take me to a break, brother. We'll take that break. I'm going to come back and put a wrap on this thing and then take some of your text messages. But my gosh, I mean, the impact that we're expecting right now is it's going to be interesting to see if it continues. I mean, they might shut the strike down tonight. Then again, 5 weeks from now, we might be trying to figure this out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Welcome to hour number three on a Taco Tuesday, which we actually learned early in the show is actually, what is this, National Taco Day? Is that what, National Taco Day? That meets with our approval. We like National Taco Day.
We got to talk about food again.
Yeah. It's hour three. I saw you sitting over there eating cheese a minute ago.
I'm so hungry.
Did you share that with anybody?
No.
Did you bring enough?
No.
See, there. Listen, I don't understand.
That's my leftover lunch.
You know, you just try. You just try to help a guy. All right. So, all right, we're going to wrap this section up here on the dock strike. I will point out to you, though, we've spent a lot of time talking on the show about we spent some time talking about what's happening in North Carolina especially, but the devastation from the hurricane that swept through and the storms that spawned off of it and the flooding thereafter, and it's been epic. We spent some time talking about what happens, it's happening right now actually, with Iran and Israel. Iran has launched nearly 200 ballistic missiles, and you have to recognize what this means in terms of the fears of a wider war right now, because as Israeli forces are launching, you know, actual ground incursions into Hezbollah territory in Lebanon, that's technically against an Iranian proxy. As they are flattening portions of the Gaza Strip, that is against Hamas, an Iranian proxy. And now Iran, though, not by proxy, but by its own right, a nation on nation, has launched 200 ballistic missiles from its own borders into Israel. I'm watching one video right now, just watching the sky. It looks like stars falling out of the sky. There's so many of them. We'll find out about the bomb damage assessment, but Israel has already said that there will be a response. In fact, the words were, we have plans. You know they have plans.
I think you alluded to this earlier in the show, but it's kind of crazy that we accept that that's an okay thing, all these proxies, yeah, that we're not just, that suddenly we've been conditioned that somehow that's okay and different than what this is.
It's like watching the news and you see that there's gang warfare in New York City or Chicago. Yeah. And then you kind of shrug your shoulders and go on. That's how normal it's gotten for Iranian proxies to attack Israel. October 7th was a bit of a watershed moment, though. The world went, whoa, wow. And now Israel is hammering Hamas, is now hammering and decapitating Hezbollah. And I have no idea what's coming next, but I guarantee you something's coming against Iran. And I'm going to bet here, I'm going to go ahead and I know I'm off topic, but I'm going to go ahead and go with it for a minute. I am going to guarantee you, it's not going to be what the Iranians expect. There's going to be some aspect of the, I mean, look, this is the country that just figured out how to blow people up with their pagers, all right? This is the country that just figured out how to make sure that if you didn't have a pager, but you had a walkie-talkie, we could still get you. They didn't launch missiles for that. And then they went ahead and said, and oh, by the way, the head of the organization, Hezbollah's guy, Hassan Nasrallah, we know where you sleep. And so they took him out in a bunker 60 feet underground.
Mm.
So I'm saying that right now, the Ayatollah, he best be in his secure hiding place. And I'm going to also bet that some things are going to blow up, and I bet some infrastructure is going to go down, and I bet there's going to be some blackouts. And I bet that as the power comes back on 3 days from now in Tehran, people are going to look around and go, what happened to Habib? We don't know. He's just not here anymore.
I'm curious what the troops are thinking, the Iranian troops, what's going through their heads right now of, well, it's fine with all the proxies, but
yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, we didn't sign up for this. Look, they're going to find out, too, how deeply Iran has been compromised by Israeli intelligence. Because I think they're already finding that out, because if you remember, it was just, what, about 5 months ago when the head of Hezbollah's military wing was at an event in Iran and was killed in Iran, which was more than just a killing of the guy. It was a signal that we can get you wherever you are. We don't care where you are.
Once you start breaking out all these toys and fancy things that you're doing, you really kind of can't stop, right? I mean, you've got to, because you don't get second chances with some of those things.
No doubt. Hey, listen, let me wrap this up. I want to say this. The dock strike, keep your eyes on it. I don't know how long it's going to last. On the dock strike, I mean, I've got right now an article from The Hill magazine that was written back in April. The headline is the Biden National Labor Relations Board has bowed down to big labor. So what we're looking at here is an administration that has sold its soul to big labor, but then was shocked recently when it didn't get the Teamsters' endorsement. And now it's paralyzed with fear, and the ILA, the dock workers, know that. And the ILA is like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You want our vote? What are you going to do? You got nothing. You got a Taft-Hartley Act? We can care less. We're gonna literally destroy the economy to get what we want. And so you've got a Biden administration that sold its soul, driving a wedge through society in favor of the union bosses, that is now literally beholden to the ILA and doesn't know what to do and won't take the action that we all need. Won't take the action that they could take by law, but they're just not going to. So, yes, I am going to go ahead and repeat what I said earlier in the show. It is my strong encouragement to you that things like your prescriptions and non-perishables that you can keep on hand and things that you need to go ahead and get those now. Charlene went today to Sam's, I know, to pick up a few things. She said the lines were just crazy because people are recognizing it. Go ahead and get the essentials and have some extra essentials. And we're not talking about raiding stores and making a run on milk and bread. I'm talking about go ahead and getting some things that if the supply chain gets crazy, you're not going to hurt. You can get a case of ramen noodles and set those things aside, and they'll be there next year when you need them. I'm just saying, go ahead and take some steps so that if things go on, which they might not, it might end by tonight. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? But don't misunderstand the impact this can have if it goes on for a few days or a week or 3 weeks. $5 billion a day impact to the economy. All right, listen, I'm going to take a few text messages and clean up this stuff because, I mean, you guys, y'all, what an audience. JP, I don't know what it was like on the Dale Jackson show, man, but we got an audience that just literally drives the train.
Oh, yeah.
Right here.
That's, the audience engagement over here is impressive.
It's just cool. Victor from Huntsville says, when the wedge gets a wedge, that's where they are right now. You're right. He says, Phil, dock workers strike. A few points. Says Biden-Harris told him it was a greedy corporation causing high prices. Now we're seeing the greed of the unions rearing their ugly head. The ILA is about to make Kamala's opportunity economy a crippling economy. Remember that economic bloodbath that Trump predicted? It's here. Wow. My gosh. Give him some applause, would you please? That was worthy of the applause. Just saying. Thank you. Thank you, Victor. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Robbie from Aniana says, stars falling out of the sky. Oh, wow, you blew my mind when you said that. Stars falling out of the heavens in the book of Revelations. Makes you think, huh? Oh, wow. Okay, Robbie, you got me on that one, and you are correct. Paula from Lacey Springs, long text, if I can get part of it at least, says, we wouldn't be so dependent on foreign goods and materials shipped here if, all caps, U.S. industries would keep their operations inside the country. Use only U.S. resources as much as possible. Employ only U.S. citizens. Here's the problem with that. Unions. Unions and hyper-regulation of U.S. industry. That's what makes it so expensive to do things here in the U.S., and it drives things offshore. See, that's where the unions lose sight. Hey, you ain't going to buy America. You're going to ship all the jobs overseas. Well, guess what? When we can't afford the products anymore because we made them here, because you're getting paid $70 an hour just to get them off the ship. I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, the cost of making the goods and then shipping the goods and then, oh, by the way, stocking the goods and then, oh, by the way, selling the goods. At some point, it's the consumer that has to wind up paying for it all.
Yeah, or like $20 an hour minimum wage.
Yeah.
And don't be surprised when they just stick a kiosk that people can go up and take their own order. I mean,
yeah.
Businesses do have to make profit.
they go out of business if they don't.
Yeah.
Funny how that works. Mike from Florence says, something I noticed about the last supply chain shortage, I'm not at poverty level, but much of it, but not much above it. He said, when certain politicians were claiming there was no shortage in the grocery stores, if there was something I was looking for, it was the most expensive brand. The generics and store brands were out for a long time, and when they did come back, they, along with everything else, were much more expensive. Some sell out quickly now, and my theory is that even some of the restaurants and other businesses likely switched to them to help offset inflation. As for toilet paper, he says, I scored a deal on a Sam's Club membership a couple weeks ago, and that happened to be one of the two things I wound up buying. 45 rolls and a bulk pack of paper towels. Shame I won't need them when they run out of food, though. Oh, wow. Mike, hang in there, brother. Mike from Florence, thank you very much. Robert from Athens says, Dear Colonel Phil, our tax laws are also to blame for supply chain shortages. If a company holds inventory, they have to pay federal taxes as if they had already sold those goods. Oh, wow. Companies cannot store up inventory and then soften the blow of strikes or pandemics or other crises which affect the supply chain. And the IRS endorsed Kamala Harris. Robert from Athens. Our audience is like on an epic scale today.
Why does the IRS endorse anyone?
That's a great point. I guess they want the people that are going to upfund them, kowtow to their union, and plus them up with 87,000 new workers.
Why does the IRS have a union? All right, I'm getting sidetracked.
Brother, you're getting all in my philosophical business right now. Let me get a couple more. Tammy from Huntsville, I am sick of the overpaid union workers and scamming union reps that don't give a blankety blank about those poor people in the aftermath of the hurricane, says Tammy from Huntsville. Spot on. Mike from Athens says, if $5 every year isn't good enough, then what do they want? They want $5 every year for the next 7 years, and then they also want to add to it some additional bennies, and then they want to deny the opportunity for automations because they figure automations could affect their workers. And they're probably right. And by the way, automation doesn't cost $70 an hour. Crystal from Moulton says, Phil, you're one of my go-to people when I need guidance and opinion on this crazy world, Rush 2.0. I am honored by that, and it ain't true, but thank you very much, Crystal from Moulton. I appreciate you. All right, brother, take me to a break right now. Take a break. We'll come right back. And don't forget that VP debate's coming up tonight. That's going to be a good one. It could be something. Trump has already called Walt a moron before the debate even starts. We'll see. Don't underestimate the guy. He can talk. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be